announcements of the attorneys, and then we'll proceed from there. First cause that we'll be hearing from today is 17808 CB NGL Water Solutions Eagle Ford LLC versus the Railroad Commission and Blue Water Disposal.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Joe Sanders on behalf of NGL Blue Water Solutions Eagle Ford LLC, and we're ready to proceed.
Okay.
Jason LaFond with the Railroad Commission.
Thank you.
David Nelson for Blue Water Disposal.
And are we going to be?
Yes, Your Honor. I'll be taking 17 minutes. My co-counsel here will be taking 3.
Thank you. And you've arranged that with?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Next case is cause number 18298 CV Susan Lewis King and Austin King, MD, versus Ken Paxton, Attorney General for the State of Texas and City of Abilene.
Ross Fisher here on behalf of Austin City King, ready to proceed.
Thank you.
Matthew Ensminger, I'm here for the Attorney General, ready to proceed.
Okay.
Stan Smith, City Attorney for the City of Abilene.
Okay. And my understanding is that we're only going to be hearing from, are we going to be hearing from both of you or no?
Not the city.
Okay. And have you figured out your time considering you're also cross-appellees?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Someone will tell me that when it's on a need, we're on a need-to-know basis, right? You'll tell me when I need to know?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. So as of you know, as each of you know, each side gets 20 minutes to argue. Again, I'm assuming that you've made arrangements if you're not going to abide by the traditional 5 minutes rebuttal. Regarding our lighting system, no matter what side you're on, when the yellow light comes on, you'll have 2 minutes to go in that portion of your argument. And for those of you that are, this is your first time here, our proceedings are now recorded, just audio. The recordings are going to be available on the court's website within a few days. So in that regard, these microphones here are simply for the audio system. They're not to amplify. So it makes it very important that if you have any recording devices, any devices that are capable of making noise, telephones, other electronic devices, please turn them off or at least silence them so that they don't distract from our lawyers and the arguments being presented here today. And with that, we are going to hear in cause number 17808 from the attorneys in the NGO Solutions versus the Railroad Commission.
Thank you, Justice Goodwin. May it please the court. Pursuant to the Railroad Commission's rules, and as its actions confirm in this case, NGL was a party to the underlying contested case hearing on the merits of Blue Water's application. And as a party, NGL has a statutory right to be heard and to present evidence bearing on the merits of that application. This case presents the court with the question of whether to, one, apply the clear language of the Railroad Commission's rules, or two, allow the commission to effectively rewrite those rules under the guise of interpretation.
So when you say a statutory right to appear, do I understand that, how does that sentence affect your UDJA claim? And are you still asserting a UDJA claim?
The UDGA claim was asserted in the alternative to the direct appeal from the judicial decision, and I think that our case on the direct challenge to the order kind of overlaps in the same way. So we're not really proceeding under the UDGA.
Because I don't see a statutory challenge. I don't see a rule challenge, and I don't see any of the commission here in their individual capacity, so there's no ultra vires. So in that respect, we're not doing a traditional any of the traditional UDJA claims. Is that
correct,
accurate?
Your Honor. Our argument will focus mainly on the direct appeal.
And to the extent that there is a due process argument, are you familiar with any cases, and have you found any cases that talk about whether or not there's a due process right to participate in a contested case hearing.
I think the due process right that we've brought to the court's attention arises from really three things. One, the unequal application of the Railroad Commission's laws to our client vis-a-vis other similarly situated people in the past. Two, and I think this is important, at the conclusion of the hearing of the merits in this case, the Railroad Commission administrative law judge taxed my client NGL with half the costs of the hearing transcript. The authority for that taxation arises solely by virtue of NGL being a party. And once NGL is properly recognized as a party, the rights under the government code to present evidence, to present argument, to cross-examine witnesses, to make opening and closing statements attach, and they can't be taken away, much less 2 months after the hearing on the merits has occurred.
Can I, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm going to go back to you, DJ. Are y'all expecting us to rule on whether you do have? I didn't understand exactly. I understand that you say it's the alternative, but if you're expecting us to rule, can you tell me how do we have jurisdiction under? And I don't want to take a lot of time because I know that's not your main argument, but I think that's where you were asking, Justice Goodwin, is are y'all proceeding with that, and are you expecting us to rule on that? And if so, can you clearly tell me how do we have jurisdiction under that?
No, Justice Triana, we're not proceeding under the UDGA claim and don't expect the court to write on it.
Okay.
The district court in this case erred when it upheld the commission's decision to exclude NGL and its evidence from a hearing once that hearing on the merits was called. And we asked this court, therefore, to hold that as a party protestant, NGL had a statutory right to appear at that hearing on the merits and to present evidence. That statutory right arises from the government code. It's also recognized in the commission's own clearly written rules.
So is there any evidence in the administrative record offered by NGL that we don't have before us here today?
Not to my knowledge. Okay.
And I'm a little confused because
sure.
We talked about statute or standing as a party versus as affected person. Can you explain to me, I know we talked about, or in the briefs, y'all are wanting us to look at the code, Texas Natural Resources Code. Then we have also the administrative code, and we also have the APA, and so I'm a little confused as to, I understand your argument, we were once a party, you can't expect us to pay for half of the transcript and then tell us, by the way, you're no longer a party. But do you believe you have to be a party? Do you believe you have to be an affected person? Either, both, and what should we look at?
I think under the rules, the way they're written, is parties have the rights that we're seeking to enforce here. So the rule speaks in terms of parties. Now, on the issue of standing, I think in this administrative proceeding, standing is really equivalent to your party status vis-a-vis the Railroad Commission rules. Now, there are other cases involving TCEQ agency standing, but it's very important to keep in mind that the TCEQ rule is written very differently than the Railroad Commission rule. The TCEQ rule is written exactly like the Railroad Commission wants to rewrite its rule in this case. It says that only affected persons, TCEQ staff, TCEQ lawyers, and the applicant can be parties. That is not what the Railroad Commission rule says. The Railroad Commission rule says the parties are the persons named or admitted as protestants, applicants, petitioners, respondents, so on and so forth. And I think on the record in this case, it's very clear that in several instances, NGL was named as a protestant and certainly admitted to the hearing on the merits as a protestant, and thus qualifies by definition a party. And what?
But can you be a participant in the administrative proceeding below to the extent that the agency is determining, are you an interested party? But then not necessarily be admitted as a party for the purposes of challenging the rest of the permit or regulation later.
Sort of like an intervener, and then you have a motion to strike the intervention. So they participate in the trial court, in the motion to strike the intervention, but then if they're struck, you can't say, well, you let me appear in the hearing, and therefore I'm a party.
That's exactly right, and there is a precise procedure in the commission's rules for that. It's called a pre-hearing conference, where they take up preliminary matters. And in this case, if you look at the transcript from the hearing, you will see the very first thing after appearances are taken, the administrative law judge asks, are there any preliminary matters we need to take up? The record at that point reveals nothing but silence. After that, opening statements then commence. Opening statements are the first of the many enumerated rights available to parties under the government code. So yes,
So is it like a waiver kind of a question? They should have taken it up at this pre-hearing conference, and by failing to do so, you're now a party for all purposes?
I think that's right. I think when the hearing on the merits began, when no one raised a preliminary matter and a hearing on the merits began, which, by the way, was acknowledged in the commission's proposal for a decision, that there was a hearing on the merits, our right as a party was determined, and our rights as a party, the rights to present evidence and be heard, were fixed and could no longer be taken away from us. And most certainly, at the very end of the hearing, when we were taxed as a party, there can be no question that our status as a party was cemented in.
And for all purposes.
For all purposes, because the government code and the commission's rule on the rights to which a party are entitled to are clear. You have the right to present evidence. You have the right to be heard, to cross-examine witnesses, to make opening and closing statements, argument.
So, and there's no you don't dispute that you're not within a half mile or under that affected person's, under, what is it, that's the utility code, right?
Correct.
Or no, that's the TAC rule. That's 3.9.
Yes.
Okay.
There's a rule regarding affected persons.
Right.
9.5E. And it says if you qualify as an affected person, you have the right to compel a hearing.
Right.
If I may, I'd like to sort of back up to give some context to the way that these applications proceed through the commission. Once an applicant like Blue Water files an application, that application will be determined down one of two tracks, an administrative approval track or a hearing track. Through a contested case procedure. What happened in this case was, obviously Blue Water filed an application, NGL filed a protest. The commission said, I'm not going to administratively approve this application, Blue Water. If you would like a hearing, you may request one within 30 days. So at that point, Blue Water could have actually said, you know what, it's not worth it, and then the case is over. That's not what happened here. Blue Water requested a hearing. And if you look at the very first page of the very first document in the administrative record, what you'll find is an internal memo from one department in the Railroad Commission to another, basically alerting that department that this matter is going to go to a hearing, and importantly says, this memorandum also identifies those parties to whom notice should be sent. And it identifies NGL as a protestant. And throughout this case, as it proceeds through the Railroad Commission's contested case procedure process, NGL is a protestant, always.
But not within the half mile as set out in the 3.9.
Right, and so that brings me back to that point. So if we imagine these two tracks and, you know, a switch operator, if you will, if you qualify as an affected person, which is where you'll find the half mile radius definition,
notice has to be
then that alone can compel that application to the hearing track. If you don't, then you don't necessarily have the right to compel that. But that doesn't mean it won't go down the hearing track. It can go down the hearing track if the commission decides a hearing's in the public interest, or if the commission did, as it did in this case, denies the application administratively, but allows the applicant to request a hearing. We're on that hearing track at that point. And once you're on that track, the affected person status has no further bearing. The only bearing the affected person status has is whether you can compel a hearing. There's no rule at the Railroad Commission, unlike at the TCEQ, that
Could
says-
Could you repeat that sentence?
Sure.
The affected person status, if you can.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, I'm starting to, my mouth's starting to dry out. your affected or one's affected person status is only relevant to that switch operator stage, only relevant to whether this particular protestant can compel the commission to have a hearing. Once the commission has decided on its own it's going down the hearing track, or the applicant has requested a hearing and it's down the hearing track, you will find no further reference to affected person in the hearing procedure rules, which again is unlike the TCEQ. The TCEQ has a rule that says only staff, counsel, applicant, and affected persons can be parties. So that's largely why we contend in our brief that the affected person status, while we do argue that we are an affected person, is irrelevant to the facts of this case, because we can't ignore the fact that there was a hearing on the merits, that we were at all times recognized as a party, and at the conclusion, subject to an order requiring us to divest ourselves of our own property based solely on the fact that we're a party. You cannot later, 2 months later, say, you know what, no hearing ever happened. This we're sending to administrative approval. This evidence, overwhelming evidence that you have brought forth to us, we're not going to consider. We're going to excise it from the record. The decision on this application will be made solely based on what the applicant submitted administratively.
So what is the relief that you're asking? If we were to agree with you that y'all were a party, then are you asking for us to remand so they can continue with the hearing? They can do what, the railroad commission?
the specific relief we're asking for today is obviously a reversal of the district court's judgment. We'd like it also, the permit that was issued pursuant to that invalid procedure, to be vacated. And finally, we would like it to be remanded back to the commission for a hearing based on the entire record developed at that hearing on the merits.
So that's what I'm asking. There was a hearing on the merits.
Absolutely.
And it concluded.
Yes, it did.
So what would it be required to do? What would the commission be required to do? Have another hearing exactly the same, or just look at what they came up with 2 months later and undo that?
We don't think another hearing is necessary. Okay. What we would ask that the commission be required to do is to do what it refused to do in the first place, and that is consider all of the evidence in the record.
Okay.
Make the evidence that we presented part of the record. I mean, the government code 2001-060 states that the record includes all evidence received. Well, there's no question the commission received our evidence, but for whatever reason just decided they were going to, I won't even say ignore it, but excise it from the record as if it doesn't exist, and have the determination of the merits of the application be made solely on what the applicant submitted administratively.
Is there anything, going back to a question I asked earlier, is there anything in the appellate record that is missing that was in the administrative record before, that y'all brought forth in the administrative record?
I'm out of time. I assume I can answer. Yeah.
No, you can.
not to my knowledge.
It's all there. So everything that you offered to the commission is there in the administrative record.
Now I understand your question. Yes.
There we go.
So NGL's exhibits are at administrative record 16.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. NGL's only interest in Blue Water's application for an injection well is as a competitor. And one of the express purposes of the commission's hearing rules is to prevent competitors like NGL from triggering adversarial proceedings on applications for injection well permits. Now, NGL was able to temporarily halt the non-adversarial review of Blue Water's application. It did this by filing a one-sentence protest that didn't reveal its interest. At that point, Blue Water had two options. It could abandon its application, or it could ask for a hearing at which it could show that NGL was just a competitor and that therefore the non-adversarial process should continue. That hearing was held, and afterwards the commission determined that in fact NGL was just a competitor and therefore therefore it could not trigger adversarial proceedings, and therefore it sent it back down to the non-adversarial process.
So now I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Are you stating that it was not a full-fledged hearing on the merits, that the only thing that the ALJ at that time looked at was whether NGL could bring the protest?
Well, Your Honor, the hearing allowed the parties to put in whatever they wanted. And so NGL put in merits evidence, but before the ALJ and the examiner were going to expend the time and effort to consider that evidence, they had to first determine whether or not adversarial proceedings could even be triggered.
And that should not have been brought up at a pre-hearing conference or some other mechanism like that.
And it maybe could have. There is no rule, there's no regulation. NGL has pointed to nothing saying that it has to be. And indeed, Blue Water said there is a preliminary question that needs to be determined. NGL acts like everyone was silent, but in fact, Blue Water said there is the real thing that you need to decide here is whether or not NGL is just a competitor, because what your rules say is that if no affected person protests, then the commission may administratively approve the application, and that is what happened here. And that has two consequences. The first is that NGL was not a party to the non-adversarial process that resulted in Blue Water's permit, which means that it cannot challenge that permit in court. The second consequence is that because no affected person protest under Rule 3.95F, the commission's administrative approval of Blue Water's application was correct and justified under its rules.
So, but to their argument that they were charged costs, they cross-examined, a question was decided adversely to them, were they at least a party to maybe like a bifurcated kind of a proceeding? One, whether or not they were an affected person, and then two, secondarily, or not, the permitting process.
Yes, Your Honor. So the reason that they were charged costs is because there was a hearing on whether or not they were, at the very least, there was a hearing on whether or not they were just a competitor, and so therefore whether or not an adversarial a proceeding had to go forth. Now, the fact that they were a party to that proceeding does not get them into court, because what they are challenging is the permit, and the permit was approved via a non-adversarial process.
Well, I hear them challenging also their status.
Sure.
The determination that they were not an affected person.
Right.
Or a party.
That's.
Did the trial court, because they challenged that, and that's a final order that was determined, did the trial court at least have jurisdiction over that segment of the claim?
No, Your Honor. And that's because with just that segment, they have a court standing problem, in that even if they win on that, it does not get them anything, because the permit still stands, because the permit was approved via a non-adversarial process. So what they're actually trying to do here is collaterally attack the permit. And we cited multiple cases in our brief in which this court has held that collateral attacks like this are not permitted. If they were a party to the permit proceeding, then they would be able to challenge
that in court.
But that's
what they're complaining. I mean, they're complaining that we should have been a party, we were a party, they dumped us out as a party, and then they went through the administrative way. I mean, I don't think that you can say if it was incorrectly done by the Railroad Commission, if we were to agree with them, that somehow that has no bearing on going the administrative route and applying, you know, and giving Blue Water a permit.
Well, Your Honor, in fact, this court has held that.
Okay.
And in the Coastal Habitat Alliance case that we cited, the plaintiff there argued, you incorrectly denied me intervention. And the court said here, you don't fall under this statute because you were denied party status. And in the Walter West PE v. TCEQ case, a 2008 case from this court, the plaintiffs there was a public hearing, and the TCEQ determined that the plaintiffs were not affected persons and therefore could not have a hearing. A permit was then approved via the administrative process, and this court held that those plaintiffs could not come into court under the APA's contested case proceeding because the permit was approved in a non-contested case.
Are those Railroad Commission cases?
Well, no, Your Honor, but what we're talking about here are the judicial review statutes. And so what we're talking about here is how do you get into court to challenge that?
So a couple things. First of all, I'd like for you to address the argument that the TCEQ has a different rule that
sure, Your
specifically
Honor.
Talks about affected persons and that the Railroad Commission only talks about parties. And also, I want you to deal with, you know, how do you, our, I guess it was our Fort Bend versus Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission, 1991, where this court said, as a matter of policy, the right to participate in agency proceedings is liberally construed in order to allow the agency the benefit of diverse viewpoints.
Sure. So first, the TCEQ point. That is a red herring. The TCEQ prohibits certain people from being parties. But the question here is whether or not NGL was entitled to be a party. If the commission, for example, had called its own hearing, it can ask whoever it wants to come in and be a party. But the whole point here is that the commission's rules are designed to prevent parties, people like NGL, from triggering hearings. And everything else that NGL has cited to you as to what a party is merely states who can be a party. None of that says who is entitled to be a party. And in fact, the commission's rules are designed so that competitors like NGL are not entitled to be parties. And that's the ultimate question here, because this case was proceeding on the non-adversarial tract, NGL protest, and so then the question was, are they somebody who can take this out of the non-adversarial process? The commission said no, and then sent it back down. Now, as to the Fort Bend case, while it is correct that there is an important policy in having lots of views come in, there is the countervailing policies that the commission is allowed to take into account of administrative convenience and the need to prevent rent seeking as happens in these cases. And as we pointed out in our brief, the case that Fort Bend County cites for that proposition, the Enos transportation case, says ultimately it's the agency that gets to decide who can come before it.
In the Railroad Commission and the Texas Citizens, the Supreme Court seems to be saying that the commission has the latitude to determine what public interest means. How does that holding impact what we're doing here in this case today?
That, Your Honor, that kind of gets towards the end here, and that's even if NGL was entitled to be a party, there's no error here. It's a totally harmless error because the only evidence that they gave was as to industry need, and as we showed, and as they do not dispute, the commission has only used industry need as a reason to grant a permit, not as a reason to deny a permit. The commission occasionally takes industry need into account when there are other factors that weigh against granting a permit, and it says, all right, well, if the industry need is so great, then we're still going to grant it even though there are these other risks. And that gets into the Texas Citizens case said that the Railroad Commission is allowed to look at these things and come up for itself with what it determines is proper under the public interest inquiry. And what Texas Citizens also said is that we can't expect the Railroad Commission to consider lots of things outside of its expertise. But that's what NGL is asking for here in its view of what industry needs should be. They want the Railroad Commission to control the market for injection wells. And the commission has no expertise or desire to take on that role.
Aren't they also, though, making an argument about Blue Water's financial responsibility?
Yes, Your Honor. And as we pointed out in their brief, they're reading the statute wrong. What the statute says is that the Railroad Commission may require this. And the Railroad Commission's practice is to require it of operators, not of applicants. And so it's something that's required after your permit is granted, not before.
I was going to say, this proceeding does not resolve that question. There still may need to be a finding of financial responsibility.
Sure, and that's between the Railroad Commission and Blue Water also. Because it's after an operator, somebody just can't come in and say, well, this person hasn't gotten a bond, which they need. But we pointed out all of these arguments in our bottom side brief, and NGL has no response in their reply brief. But if I could circle back to jurisdiction, Your Honor, there are two principles that guide us here. The first is that there is no general inherent right to judicial review, and the second is that waivers of sovereign immunity must be clear and unambiguous. Those two principles combined mean that it is NGL's burden to come forth with a statute that clearly and unambiguously entitles it to review in this court. They've cited three statutes, the UDJA, the contested case provision.
I think we've resolved UDJA. We're not dealing with that.
Yep,
we got that.
We can take that one out. The two others are the contested case provision of the APA and Section 85.241 of the Natural Resources Code. But as I said previously, the APA contested case provision does not apply here because NGL's Blue Water's permit was not approved via a contested case.
And the determination of their status, whatever we call it, party, affected person, whatever, that was not a contested case proceeding.
Your Honor, even if it was, if they came here and challenged that, they would be out of luck because they wouldn't have standing in this court.
Because of the permitting issue.
Right, because all they would get is an opinion from this case saying the Railroad Commission made a mistake. But that wouldn't do anything to Blue Water's permit, which was approved via the non-adversarial process, in which they were not a party to. And so, if I point this court again to Walter West PE v. TCEQ 260 Southwest 3rd 256. In that case, the plaintiffs, at a public meeting, the TCEQ said, you're not an affected person, so you don't have standing. So then there was no hearing. The permit was approved via a non-adversarial process, and this court looked to the APA and said, you don't apply, the APA contested case proceeding does not apply here because the non-adversarial process is not a contested case.
But hypothetically speaking, what if we said, "Oh my gosh, they are affected persons"? Then what happens?
Well, I would say again, it's too late for that. There are other mechanisms by which people can challenge the application of rules. There is an APA declaratory judgment action, and in extreme cases, there is mandamus. But what you can't do is wait till the order is final, and then through a non-adversarial process, and then come back and say, well, this preliminary problem over here now infects this. If I could turn to 85.241, the text of that statute facially does not apply to this case. It says, an interested person affected by orders of the commission relating to oil and gas and the waste of oil and gas. And it's that second "and" that's doing all the work here. These orders must involve the waste of oil and gas. And that's not to be confused with oil and gas waste. Waste, as used here, is as in waste not, want not. And what this provision is getting at is kind of in the heartland of what the Railroad Commission is known for doing, which is determining who can drill for oil, where, and when. And that's what this statute goes to. It does not go to the injection well in a totally different statute or in a totally different code, which has nothing to do with preventing waste of oil and gas. Now, NGL has cited various cases where it says, well, 85.241 was cited and they say injection well in the case. In all of those cases, those were injection wells about exploring for oil and gas. And the commission was determining whether or not there was a concern over waste or conservation of oil and gas. in no case has 85.241 been used by this court or the Supreme Court to review a commission order on injection wells under the water code. And so we've gone through all of NGL statutes, and they have none that clearly and unambiguously allow them to come into court and challenge Blue Water's permit.
I think both parties, both sides agree that, you know, the Injection Well Act is silent as to the right to judicial review. Both of y'all want us to look at different things. I go back to, you know, whether we're looking at the Railroad Commission's own rule. Where are you getting the competitor? If you're a competitor, you cannot, you know, ipso facto, you have no standing to bring a protest.
Sure, Your Honor. So the commission's rules say that a competitor may not be an affected person. And also they say that an affected person may compel a hearing. Only an affected person, a local government, or the Railroad Commission can compel a hearing. And if a hearing is not compelled, if there is no affected person who protests, then you go through the non-adversarial permitting process. The Supreme Court in the City of Waco case cited in our brief used those combined provisions to say that this is a standing provision. And if I may just finish this answer, shortly before the Injection Well Act was passed, the Supreme Court of Texas held that when somebody says affected person, it means the same as aggrieved person, which means standing. When agencies use a affected person, they are talking about standing. They are talking about people who have the entitlement to compel adversarial process. And everything, the Texas Register shows this, everything that the commission was getting at here was to prevent what NGL is trying to do. Thank you, Your Honor. We ask that you would affirm.
May it please the court, I'm David Nelson. I'm representing Blue Water Disposal, and I was the lawyer on behalf of Blue Water at the Railroad Commission hearing. So I have some firsthand knowledge of what went on that day, and I'd like to impart a little of that to you in the 3 minutes I've been allotted. The hearing commenced with an objection by Blue Water in its opening statement, saying that NGL was appearing only as a competitor, that the evidence would show that they were only a competitor, and only competitor means that they do not have the right as an affected party to initiate a protest. They have the right to participate. Once a protest is initiated, they can come in as an interested party or an intervener or various other capacities that the commission often allows. It just means that they can't start the fight. They can join the fight, they just can't be the one to start it. And we're arguing at the hearing.
I think that's precisely what they're arguing here, is that, hey, they just, you know, we had a fight, we joined.
We joined, but you don't have the right to join unless it's been a valid protest that started it. You can join, but you can't start.
Do you have any authority for that?
Well, only in the sense that the protest has to be created by an affected party, and the rule specifically excludes competitors. It was so important to exclude competitors that not only did they define who the affected parties are, they went farther to say, in addition to that, we are going to specifically exclude competitors, because we've had far too many examples where people come in just as competitors to try to eliminate the competition, and it messes up the process terribly.
So the fact that you proceeded with a contested case proceeding is not the same thing as being forced into a protest?
Absolutely. Okay. What we showed up with was to say to the commission, we don't think this is a valid protest. These people are here only as competitors, and we're going to show you that. So there was evidence presented, and we cross-examined their witnesses, and it was established very clearly that they were there only as a competitor. At the conclusion of that hearing, we re-urged again our position, saying the evidence clearly shows in this proceeding that they are here only as competitors, and therefore they cannot initiate this protest. And the commission agreed. The administrative law judge said, now that we see the evidence that's been presented here, it's clear to us without question that NGL is here only as a competitor. If that is the case, they cannot initiate this protest. They can join in once it's initiated by an affected party. They can join the fight, but they can't start it. And that's what they're trying to do. And that's what we objected to. And that's why the commission excluded them as a protestant, because they were only there as a competitor. But I think you can appreciate how important it is. You have to have some kind of process to establish that in the beginning. And if all they do is show up and say, hey, we're a party, and once we're a party forever and ever, even if you prove we're a competitor, it doesn't matter now because we're a party. It just can't work that way.
But don't you think that the, I mean, you don't think the commission should or is required to consider all relevant evidence, regardless of it, whether it comes from an official protester or not?
I think they should consider relevant testimony and evidence, but I think it has to be a process whereby it is presented in a forum where there is a valid protest. Because if you don't do it that way, what the commission was dealing with in the past was anybody could walk in off the street, and a lot of competitors did, and said, we protest. And then you had to have a hearing under the Administrative Procedure Act. It took months to process it. And finally, the commission and the legislator said, enough of this. We're going to pass a statute and a rule that says that competitors can't do that anymore. And that's what's happened.
Thank you. Mr. Sanders, I'm going to ask you, because if we don't agree with you that y'all are a party, and then their argument is that you're not an affected person. So do you have anything, y'all hanging your hat on, we're a party, and that's it, and if we lose on that, then we're not an affected person, or are y'all also arguing in the alternative, if you do agree that, competitors can't bring protests, this is how we're an affected party.
We are absolutely making the argument that we qualify as an affected person. Now, affected, we have to be careful not to conflate or equalize affected person with parties, because that's what you do at the TCEQ, mm-hmm. not here. But absolutely, we're an affected person, and there's been much written and now much said about competitors can't be affected persons. I must have heard it 5 times just now. How do we know that's not true? We know that's not true because if your competitor and your well happens to be located within a half a mile of the proposed well, guess what? You're an affected person. We also know, and this is articulated in our brief, that just because you're a competitor doesn't mean you can't be an affected person. The rule is not written in the way that it's been portrayed here. The rule is not written to say all competitors are excluded. The rule is written to say you cannot qualify as an affected person if your claimed injury is a competitive one. If you come in and say, man, if this well gets granted, I'm going to have to lower my costs and this is going to come out of my pocket, that's a competitive injury. But a competitor.
Let me get more specific. Are we talking about your status under Rule 3.9?
We're talking about whether a competitor, yes, can be an affected person.
And what portion of 3.9 are you claiming, notwithstanding everything else, we are an affected person under 5A, 5E, where are we arguing this?
5E, which 5E. Defines what is an effective person.
5E, paired with the two little I's, that one?
I think it's Romanet 2, yes.
Yeah, okay. Just want to make sure which one we're talking about here.
Yes.
I've got a chart of all the various statutes, and so yeah. I just want to see which channel I'm walking up.
Of course.
Yeah.
But again, back to my original point. This whole, the thrust of their whole argument relies on the fiction that no hearing on the merits occurred. The Railroad Commission's own proposal for decision says a hearing on the merits was heard. The notice of that hearing said the commission will have a hearing, you're invited to attend, it will entertain the pleadings and evidence bearing on the merits. There was no motion filed in writing before the hearing challenging our affected person status. The first official objection was during the opening statement. Opening statement, remember, is one of the rights conferred to a party. They can say whatever they want. But just to be also clear, and this is revealed from the transcript of that hearing, Blue Water didn't just talk about our affected person and competitor status. They put on plenty of technical evidence through their own witness on the merits of their application. to say that no merits hearing occurred is really to contravene every single fact in this case. Now, if I may just briefly address our basis for jurisdiction. In 2004, as the court's well aware, the Supreme Court recognized in Mega Child Care that the APA provides an independent right of judicial review when the agency's enabling statute neither specifically authorizes nor prohibits review. So in this case, the question becomes, what then is the agency's enabling statute? There are two options as I see it. It's either the statute that enables the agency as a whole, allows it to come into being, which would be the Natural Resources Code, or it would be the statute that empowers the commission to regulate disposal wells, which would be the Injection Well Act in the Water Code. I think that's probably the most appropriate enabling act in this case. And Justice Triana, as you recognized earlier, I think all parties do agree that the Injection Well Act in the Water Code is silent as to judicial review. And the Supreme Court tells us in Mega Child Care what happens when the enabling act is silent. And what happens is the APA provides an independent basis for judicial review. This order also relates to oil and gas.
Is it without limitation?
Is without limitation meaning? Well, there's the limitations of exhaustion of administrative remedies and all those things that we unquestionably did in this case. But I don't think there's any dispute as to whether we complied with the technical requirements of the APA. I think it's founded on whether the APA creates a right of review in this case.
So I have a couple more questions.
Sure.
I know your time is out. What specific injury or harm are y'all claiming? So let's assume that we go to affected person and we get over the Railroad Commission's rule that competitors cannot be affected persons. What is the harm? What I'm hearing them say is the only thing y'all brought up is the industry need. And how does that not sound like y'all are bringing competitors, like, well, this is going to hurt our bottom line?
Sure. The harm the harm really is a procedural one, setting aside the course of that we've been ordered to depart with our money. But the harm is a procedural one. And so by way of background, if I could just have 1 minute to explain the Karnes County and Supreme Vacuum cases, because I would like to correct something that was said earlier. And that is
quickly.
This industry need public interest issue has never really, to my knowledge, been used to grant a permit. It's been used to defeat them. That's what happened in the Karnes County case. That's what happened in the Supreme Vacuum case. And what's key about that is the evidence offered in those proceedings to show the lack of need and therefore the lack of public interest was offered by a member of the general public, a term you'll also see in 95E next to competitor. So the harm, to answer your question, Justice Triana, that we're suffering is the inconsistent application of this rule throughout.
So you disagree with what I heard, I think, Mr. Nelson say, that the only time that it's been used is to grant that industry need has only been used in order to grant permits, not to deny permits?
I do disagree. If you look at tab 7 to our brief, you'll see the full proposal for decision in the Supreme Vacuum case, the evidence discussed, and the fact that it was not in the public interest because there was no demonstrated need. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cause will be submitted.